Good afternoon, Red Tails. This is Captain Eve Durfelt, Public Affairs Officer for the 332nd. Today we have a special guest on our Spitfire podcast, Colonel Christopher Auger, who's our Vice Wing Commander. Welcome, sir.
Thanks, Eve. I want to say thanks, first of all, to you and your team for doing this. I really appreciate what you guys do for our wing.
Yeah. So Colonel Auger is new to the 332nd, just kicking off his year-long tour. So we decided to do a podcast. We figured it'd be the best way for our airmen to get to know you. So sir, why don't you go ahead and just tell us about yourself, where you're from, your background in the Air Force?
Awesome. So I grew up in Connecticut, right? And if anybody has any questions on which side of Connecticut, I'll just say I'm a Red Sox fan, not a Yankees fan. So you can tell I grew up in the Northeast. I went to Norwich University in Vermont. From there, I took Air Force ROTC, and I joined the Air Force shortly thereafter. That was in 1999, so it was about, if I do the math, about 22 years ago. Mm-hmm. Amazing how fast that happens. I went into the Air Force to be a navigator, and I'll be honest, I'm an F-15E WISO, or Weapons Systems Officer, and I kind of naively went in thinking that that was the only job I wanted to do. No idea how lucky I am to actually do that, but Thank God it worked out, and I'm an F-15E WISO. I've got 3 operational assignments behind me. This will be my 6th total deployment. Most of those were flying, one of them was not. I ended up being a squadron commander at a formal training unit at Seymour Johnson, the 333rd Fighter Squadron. It was an absolutely awesome experience. And then from there, I went to the Pentagon. Only got about 9 months in the Pentagon, and now I find myself blessed and lucky enough to be here.
That's great. And so initially, we kind of talked a little bit yesterday, and you didn't want to go into the military, right?
Yeah, so kind of a funny story there, and I'm still trying to figure out what I want to do when I grow up or when I want to do that. I would say I was the first on both sides of my extended family to go to college. So for us, it wasn't something I looked at like in high school. I went to a vocational high school. I was going to be an electrician, and my mom happened to work as a guidance counselor secretary and realized like college is a thing and I probably ought to do it. And she pretty much told me I'm doing it. I didn't really want to do that. So anyway, I went up going to college. I did not have any intention of joining the military. My dad served in the Air Force during Vietnam. He was stationed in Thailand and loaded bombs on F-105, so I kind of had that interest there. And to date myself, Top Gun was still a thing, right, in that movie, and F-14 Tomcats, and I knew the Air Force flew F-15Es, so I had some interest there. I just never thought it was something I could do. When I went to Norwich University, you had to take ROTC. You didn't have to go in the Air Force, but you had to take ROTC for a period of time. So my freshman year, I was pretty much realized I had the opportunity to fly, and I was kind of hooked on it, and I knew I wanted to fly the F-15E.
Yeah.
And I knew I wanted to fly the F-15E, and I was very lucky that it all worked out. So I would say that then once I went in the Air Force, I said, well, the minimum commitment's 6 years. So at the most, 6 years. Okay, go to weapons school, maybe 12 years now. Okay, well, it's close enough to 20, so I might as well try for retirement. So maybe I'll go to 20, but I'm definitely not going to be a squadron commander and stay in past 20.
You're right.
20 happened 2 years ago. I find myself here, and I honestly just love the family and the camaraderie and the mission, and I find it hard to quit.
Right. I feel like when you come up to those dates, you're like, oh, I could stick it out for a little bit longer and a little bit longer. And
that's the problem. And I'll be honest, if my family was the least bit ready for me to stop doing this, I would, but that's been honestly the hard part for me. There's times where I've been more ready to stop doing this than my family is. They keep encouraging, and they're just, I'm super lucky.
Yeah, that's fantastic. It's really good to know. So speaking of your family, you're going to be here for the next year. How did you prepare them to be away for 365 oddish days?
Yeah, so that's a good question. This is the first remote or 365 I've been on. So trying to think about how to do that. I'll be honest, I'm absolutely blessed. My wife, Lindsay, she was a prior Air Force. She was a services officer, now FSS, for about 10 years. She got out about 10 years ago, and we had my son, Jack. So I've got 2 kids, Jack, he's 10, and Maddie, she's 6. They are the love of my life. They're awesome. But I would say all 3 of them together are a bunch of rock stars, right? So Lindsay was a military brat as well. So her dad went on a 365 while she was a kid. So my kids just kind of think it's part of the adventure, honestly. And I'm set up with an awesome support network at home. I did try to make sure that I took care of all the things that only I could do,
right,
and then tried to set them up for success as much as possible, while I'm gone. And right. So far, knock on wood, it's been about a month and a half, and they're doing great.
Yeah. Do you have any advice for the airmen who also might be away, obviously not for a year, but while they're away from their families, any tools?
Absolutely. I would say stay connected as much as possible. So we've got some incredible technology now. Like when I grew up, it was, if you were deployed, you had maybe a 15-minute call once a week that you had to work through DSN lines. It may be your time spot was at 2 a.m. and your family might have to wake up for that with a time change.
Right.
This day and age, Wi-Fi is prolific here. You have the opportunity to connect at any point. So figure out what time works for your family, but most importantly, just be present, even if it's virtually. Stay connected with your family. Try to do that on a daily basis. And it doesn't matter whether you have spouse and kids at home, or it's just mom and dad or other family and friends. Let them know what you do to the extent that you can. And just stay connected and listen. Honestly, there are a lot of times where Lindsay's at home with the kids all day and she just needs an adult to talk to. And sometimes just listening is all that they need. So just be present.
Right. Yeah, that's really important. And so as we go through the year, we know how quickly things change here and they also change at home. So what's your approach to change management, whether that be professional or personal?
I would say my approach to change management from a leadership perspective is I always want to make things better, but I also want to reduce turbulence, right? So in the absent AOR, or the area of responsibility we're in, change is about the only constant. So everything is changing all the time. I look at my job as a vice wing commander and as wing leadership here to try to minimize the turbulence that change injects to our airmen and on our frontline leaders. I would say I do that. So there's a strategic and then breaking it down to the operational and tactical level. That's where I think we come into play. So to take the intentions and the direction from our senior level leadership, from the president and the national security strategy on down through the Secretary of Defense with the national defense strategy, which we expect to change a little bit this year or over the next year or so, it always shifts the focus out here, right? So it's understanding what drives the commander of CENTCOM and our Combined Forces Air Component Commander or the AFCENT Commander, what drives their emphasis. So trying to stay on top of that, understand and anticipate those changes, and then working with them to make sure that we're meeting their intent here. I then try to take that and figure out how do we apply that operationally to our mission here, and then try to do that and convey the purpose for that change or the reason for that change to our airmen so that way when we see the change here, it makes sense.
Right, right, totally. And so when the airmen see it, what was your impression of the airmen in the 332nd when you first got here?
Honestly, so it's been a few years since I've deployed. I have, the first day I was here, before I even went to sleep, I realized the professionalism of our airmen, the excellence in everything that they do, and more importantly, the culture here on this base is absolutely amazing. Right, people care about each other and they treat each other with a sense of mutual respect, right? And I feel like that trust, we have that level of trust and that culture of trust is set here. I don't feel like I showed up and had to earn my 332nd patch, right? Or I had to earn my chance to become a member of the Red Tails or to be a Red Tail. Folks are a Red Tail the second they show up here, maybe even before they get here, right? So that trust is inherent, and I could just feel the attitude here was awesome when I showed up. Folks were in their fifth or sixth month of their deployment, and I didn't get that, you know, what you'd expect, that kind of drag, right, where people are kind of deflated and de-energized towards the end of a deployment and just right. ready to be done. They were still excited to do their job, and most importantly, they were connected to the mission. They know how they touch the mission, and I could sense that just in my initial conversations.
Right. Yeah, it's definitely a neighborhood feel and a community feel, and, you know, it's kind of like you walk down the street and you say hi to your neighbors, except you're saying hi to your fellow wingmen, so it's kind of like the same. So you kind of have a little bit of a family here, right? Because you were the chief and weapons tactics chief for the 494th a while back. How does it feel to be with the modern day Panthers again?
It feels great. But when you say a while back, you make me realize how old I am. So that was about almost 13 years ago. I got out of weapons school and I showed up as an instructor in the Panthers, the 494th Fighter Squadron. A great squadron then, they're a great squadron now, and it was an absolute privilege to prepare that squadron for deployment and then lead them to a deployment to Bagram, Afghanistan in 2008. Wow. It was a successful deployment. I would say the people are all different right now, so the faces aren't the same, but I'd say the attitude is the same. They're still happy to be here. They're professionals at doing their job. And honestly, I'm flying right now. I'm flying in the same airplanes that I flew 13 years ago with the Panthers at war as well.
That is incredible. And it's just such a small Air Force world. And so being like with that family and being with the same aircraft, and we're kind of carrying the legacy of, you know, the fighter squadron that you grew up in, and now we're deployed with them, it kind of bridges into our legacy as a 332nd that morphed from the 332nd fighter group comprised of the Tuskegee Airmen. So our legacy is really important here, and you've really embraced that. How do you plan to keep that going, that legacy?
I'd say the Red Tails not only were legendary, they still are legendary. I look at the achievements that they're doing just here on the base, but also in combat in the area of responsibility and within CENTCOM. It's amazing the work that they're doing each day, and I wish we could talk about it more here, but it's absolutely incredible, right? I will say is, you know, we look at our legacy as the first African American aviation unit and almost an experiment at the time, and I see how much they succeeded. I want to highlight the fact that they fought two wars, right? So while the original Red Tails were fighting the Germans in the European theater, they were also fighting a war at home, right? The war of segregation, racial discrimination, racial disparity. I'd like to say that's completely fixed right now, but we need to acknowledge that in our country, especially in the United States as a whole, racial discrimination is not completely fixed, right? That's something we still need to work at every single day. We need to afford other airmen here in the 332nd equal opportunity, and the equal opportunity to be able to succeed in everything they do. And the underlying culture of mutual respect is what makes that happen, right? So race, religion, gender, all of that is not important as far as how you do your job. What is important is how well you do your job, the excellence you apply to it, and more importantly, the character. We need to value people's character, and we need to exploit what diversity brings to this wing. When you look around, there are so many different people here, and that's the key to our strength, honestly, is the amount of diverse thought that they bring and experience they bring to the mission.
Right, and so we all know that leadership has a lot to do with that, and you and the rest of our leadership team have been absolutely incredible with leading the charge when it comes to the racial disparity challenge and approaching it. And so what is your leadership philosophy while you're here? How'd you get into it?
I think everybody's leadership philosophy, at whatever level you're at, you need to focus on being a servant leader, right? So what's that mean? That means putting other people first, and that means that you eat last, okay? I know there's a book on that. You can go out and read it if you want. That's just a kind of a symbolism for what it really means, is to put others before yourself, especially others that you lead. And it's something that we need to apply at every level here. As far as my personal philosophy, I think we win by connecting airmen to the mission. We weave those six priorities into everything we do here, every conversation we have, from deterring Iranian aggression all the way down to developing and caring for our warfighters as a fundamental priority. But if we connect airmen to the mission and let them know, empower them by letting them know how they support each part of the mission, regardless of who they are on this base, what group they're in, or how far they feel like they're dislocated from the mission, they have their fingerprints on everything we do operationally here, and it has impacts nationally and across the AOR. I also think, from a philosophy perspective, we need to, I need people to feel comfortable at taking smart risk and innovating within their job. I still need them to follow their TOs, but I need them to take a risk. What's that mean? We're going to fail every so often, and this can't be a one-mistake Air Force. We're going to fail, and if we're not failing occasionally, we're probably not trying hard enough. So we need to accept that. We need to not be afraid of failure,
right?
And we need to take smart risks. One thing, how I look at the mission, I have a lot of people ask, do you put mission first? Do you put people first? And I see different commanders do different things. For me, it's more of a picture, so I'm going to have to draw this for you verbally. But I draw it as a triangle, okay? I put the mission on top inside that triangle because obviously the mission's first. We wouldn't be here if that mission wasn't important, right? However, on the bottom of that triangle on both sides, I put people on one side and family on the other, right? And it's the foundation, very much like our priorities, developing and caring for airmen and strengthening relationships are foundational priorities. The people and families, if we don't take care of them, then that foundation falls apart and the mission can't happen. So while the mission might be first, you can't do it without people and families.
Right. And that foundation has been absolutely instrumental of how we lead this wing. And I think that's what leads to our airmen being empowered and creating the culture that we have here. And so building into that philosophy, you being the vice commander, how does that play into our overall mission, your role specifically?
So I look at my role, and I'll be honest, I've never worked for a wing staff agency. I did not have a lot of experience before this. So I asked a lot of mentors and other wing commanders and other vices of what does the vice do? And from being here for the last month and a half, what I've learned is that the vice is that leader behind the scenes. So this isn't a flashy job. This isn't a job where I get a lot of face time with the wing and I'm out front all the time. I'm okay with that. So I'm always backing up our wing commander, and I'm conveying his intent to our group commanders. And likewise, I'm working with our group commanders and kind of being that connective tissue between them, our wing leadership, and our helping agencies here. So kind of that behind-the-scenes support where I can get a lot of work done by both seeing what's happening and trying to find ways to connect folks to the mission and connect solutions to problems, if you will. And that's what I hope I'm able to do while I'm here. Another huge part of my role is the vice at most wings, as it is here, is responsible for the helping agencies team. And to me, that relates directly to our priorities 5 and 6, right? Our foundational priorities of strengthening relationships and developing and caring for our warfighters, right? So there are a lot of stressors, especially in a deployed environment. The helping agencies team is an organization here that kind of pulls together all the helping agencies on base to include chaplain, mental health, the SARC, equal opportunity, and many others, as well as our diversity and inclusion working group and task force, right? It ties them together, and it looks at what common issues do we have amongst these teams. So how can we kind of join forces across these teams to solve bigger problems for our airmen? What are they dealing with?
Right. Yeah, and our helping agencies team and our Diversity and Inclusion Council, they do absolutely incredible work. They're an absolutely incredible group around the wing. And so when we talk about helping agencies and wearing a lot of hats, we have to take care of ourselves in the process, and especially being here for so long in this environment. And we're taught about goals when we first get here. Have you set any goals for yourself personally or professionally since you've gotten here?
You know, I have. I've tried to. I've never been good about setting long-term goals. It's always been one of my faults. So I'm trying, as I get older now and family, I'm trying to be much better about setting those goals, especially when you have an opportunity on a deployment like this. And I know everybody's working hard, but you're also, for most of us, are in a routine here. So you have the time, hopefully, to be able to fit in things that you wouldn't otherwise do. I think you need to set up personal and professional goals. But I would start by saying, to set up those goals, you need to kind of understand your values and your priorities, right? So a value to me is just something that I find important, right? And everybody should have something that they find important. The reason I say that is because you need something to set your moral compass, right? That how do I know what's right and wrong? If we all just act off of our own internal thoughts and values, then your moral compass is going to shift. It's going to float, right? You're in that right and wrong is not always going to be set to true north. So I think everybody here has to have something bigger than them in their lives, whether that's part of the spiritual pillar or religion. It doesn't matter. You need to find something that you believe in, something that's bigger than you, to set those values. And they don't have to be the same as mine by any means, but you have to have values.
Totally.
The other thing I would add is priorities, right? So how do you prioritize those values to know what's important? And it guides your decisions on a daily basis, right? And the goals that you eventually set. For me personally, I set the values of faith, family, and force, right? And I try to keep things in those priorities. However, I'm on a 365 right now, so I'm not always able to put my family before this wing, and I totally understand that. This wing is my family right now, right? But by having those priorities, it helps me decide each and every day when I make decisions of what's more important. Your priorities don't need to be the same as mine by any means, but I just urge you to set priorities, and that'll help you set those goals.
Yeah.
For me, the goals I've set personally, one of them is I want to work out more. I'm not good about it at home. But here, I have the opportunity to set that schedule. And even if it's just 30 minutes, I'm making it to the gym every day. So set a weight loss goal. Set a weight gain goal. I don't know where you happen to be at the time, right? Start reading books. Like, what books have you wanted to read? What have you wanted to learn about? Better yourself, even if it's professionally or personally, right? We have Air Power Leadership Academy here. That's an awesome opportunity to learn from some senior NCOs and officers how to be a better NCO and how to be a better leader within our Air Force. The first ALA graduation that I went to, I was just amazed at what we're teaching these folks above and beyond just the job that they're executing while they're here. So take those opportunities to make yourself better, whether it's a degree or just some basic informal learning. Find a way to make yourself better, come up with a plan, and then execute it while you're here.
Yeah, we have a great group of folks, whether it be our private organizations or our ALA cadre. The gym itself is just an incredible facility, and so it really gives you so many different avenues to better yourself while you're solely focused on being here and you're not with family or not with your loved ones, and gives you a lot of time to focus on those things. And I think our wing, like you said, we just have a lot of opportunities and great organizations to help you meet those goals.
We do, and you actually hit the nail on the head when you mentioned some of our professional organizations or some of our nonprofits that we have here. I just had some experience the other day at an event with the Rising Four, and what an amazing group of young airmen that just take an opportunity to better themselves and lead other airmen, and they're just formal and informal leaders here within the wing, and they have so much impact on what happens here, but it's simply because of how much they care about this mission that they do that. So take those opportunities.
Oh, absolutely, and especially it's one of their first deployments, you know, being in the Rising Four, our airmen, senior airmen who are making up that leadership team, and what they've done is just absolutely amazing. So as a leader, those airmen, what can they expect from you?
I think in general, I want airmen to expect me to set the example, right? I'm never going to ask an airman here to do something that I wouldn't do myself. And when I can, I'm going to get in the trenches with them and try to do that. Unfortunately, I can't every day go out there and spin wrenches or push paperwork, but I appreciate what you do and I want to learn what you do. So I need you to teach me how to do that as well. So I'm going to teach me what you do in your job. I want to know what you experience here in the wing, and I want to know how I can help, right? How can we as leadership help remove roadblocks from your organization or from your specific job? How can we help you work better with other organizations, like work laterally, you know, flatten this organization out? How can I get airmen to work with other airmen? I want to put airmen out in front too. So this is not a job that needs to be about me by any means, just because we're the wing leadership. This is not about us. It's about the airmen here that actually get the job done. So when that opportunity comes up, I want to put airmen out in front. Help me find those opportunities, especially your frontline leaders out there. Like, how do we put your airmen out in front and highlight them to other organizations within the wing or just to our leadership as well? I've talked about servant leadership, something I believe in strongly, and I always try to, you know, help myself better define that, right? The other thing you can expect, I want to hold others accountable. Right. So whether that's right or wrong, or whether they're doing something right or wrong, we should all be holding others accountable. Right. We should all be that formal or informal leader on this base that steps in and stops something before something bad happens, whether that's personally or professionally. And likewise, I want to hold myself accountable. So I can't get better without feedback, and I'll take feedback from any individual level. So if you've got something for me, please bring it up. I can't get better without it.
Yeah, and having the opportunity to get to know you over the last few weeks has been awesome, and I can just tell from your persona and the way that you've interacted with us, specifically in public affairs, has been awesome, and that you're very vested in not only what PA does, but who we are and what we might need. And so we've greatly, greatly appreciated that. And so we're going to go ahead and wrap up here in a minute. Is there anything else that you would like to add, sir?
Yeah, I just want to say I'm truly thankful for everybody out there, especially the airmen in this wing, to watch how hard they work. And again, to show up late in their deployment and to see the attitude and the energy and the enthusiasm that they still had, to see how everybody truly understood how they execute the mission. I'm truly thankful and honestly blessed to have this opportunity and the privilege to be a servant leader here and to lead this team in an incredible, honestly incredible combat mission.
That's awesome, sir. Well, thank you so much for your time. Thanks for joining us on the podcast. We're glad that we had an opportunity for the airmen to get to know you and to hear from you. And so we will close up this episode of the Spitfire podcast. Thanks for joining us.
Red Tail Spitfire.